Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 563. And this week's guest is you lot. I'm having a time-lapse digital conversation with you lot. Because a load of you put questions on my Instagram post asking for questions, and I'm going to answer them all. I did one of these a year ago, and it got really ASMR-y because I'm on my own in my living room. I've not got a lot of lights on. I'm quite a blinds closed guy. And, you know, I'm just going to relax and go through your lovely questions. So let's see how that goes. I'm brought to you as ever by speechdevelopmentrecords.com. I'm working on something fun over at speechdevelopmentrecords.com at the moment. A new bit of merch, which weirdly is going to lose me money, but I think could do some positive things. So check that out. I'm sure I'll shout about it on here as and when. In fact, let's shout about it. I've not confirmed it yet and it's not up yet. So I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I did talk about it over on twitch.tv/ScroobiusPipio. So if you want to catch me fully unfiltered, tune into any of those streams. If you don't know what Twitch is, it's fine. You're listening to a podcast, so you can make Twitch work. Remember when there was a point where you were like, I don't even know what a podcast is? If you're like that with Twitch at the moment, sort yourself out, man. And patreon.com/ScroobiusPip is where you can support the podcast for as little as a dollar a month. And that helps pay the bills. Let's get into the episode. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 563. It's Ask Pip, baby. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. This piece of fiction is the intro to Distraction Pieces. Right, here we go. You guys delivered as ever on the questions. I panicked, I think about an hour after making the post, I had about five questions and at least three of them were shit. So I thought this wasn't going to happen. But then, you know, we've had like over 60, I think, in the end. And there's some great ones in there. There's some terrible ones in there. Always is. That's fair. It's going to happen. But let's kick things off with a question from Liam T. 1984. With the current rising costs of film, do you think A-listers should make less to ensure films are made? How long till actors are getting 100 million plus for a film? I mean, I've started with one that's really hard to answer because I don't really know. Like, the whole point of the strikes was to get better rates or better, fairer payments and all that for actors and everyone in the film industry. Again, a lot of people have in their head it's just for these millionaire actors, but that's not the case. Simon Pegg talked recently about how when he gets a big fee for a film, it's not for the making of the film, it's not for the art, it's for the relentless press schedules that can come with that, that can really fuck you up mentally and physically. It can ask a lot. And again, a lot of people will be shaking their heads and rolling their eyes, but allow it, man. Like, I've worked in factories, I've worked in retail, at Christmas, multiple Christmases. I've worked in delivery. I've not worked in offices, really. That's the one kind of area I've not worked in. But what I'm saying is I've had a lot of jobs and at times the entertainment industry has been the one that's burnt me out the most and damaged me the most. I'm not saying it's harder. I'm just saying it's not the dream that people think it is, and there's a relentlessness to it. Like, there's a lack of acknowledgement of work hours, you know. It can be expected to be 24/7, 365, you know. So, yeah. Should huge actors take pay cuts? I don't know, man. I always think if we're cutting pay, it should be for the people who are doing the least, you know. So I think I'd rather we look along the big execs and stuff like that who are making millions or billions each year. And I'd rather we trim a little bit off there first and the people. Because, again, the fact is, fucking pick a name out of a hat, Jason Statham turns up and does a film, The Beekeeper, which is a film I really enjoyed. And I'm not particularly like a Statham fanboy in any way, but people are going to see that because of Jason Statham, right?
Now, whether or not they enjoy it or not is down to a lot of other people involved. But the actual getting people in the door on a film like that, when there's not many other huge names in it, on a film like that, that's the person who's getting them through the door. So that should come with a premium, right? I don't know. I've not really got a good answer on this. I'm trying to be fair and not just go, yeah, fuck them. Like, I always used to get annoyed in that first era of Premier League footballers are getting paid so much, they're not worth that. And I completely agree that our nurses should be being paid more, our bin men should be being paid more, all the people that we've realised are crucial parts of society. I've talked about this a lot on the Rutger Bregman episodes, on loads of other episodes. But I also don't agree with they're not worth it, because no one's paying them for fun. They're paying them because they bring that money back in. You know, no club is going, oh, I just want to throw this money away. They are worth it because people are willing to pay amounts to go to see them and so on and so forth, to buy their shirts and so on and so forth. So they are worth it. So it isn't as simple as they're not worth it. It's more looking at a societal problem of what we prioritise as a society, rather than what these, sometimes, than what these big businessmen are prioritising, because they're doing business. If we make those players worth that, then they are worth it. If we stop making them worth it and we make other things worth it, then I will keep saying worth it, worth it. Bex 17, who I think I went to school with, like was in my brother's year, I think, at school. So shout out if that is the same person. The question is, given that God is infinite and that the universe is also infinite, would you like a toasted tea cake? I'm recording this just before Easter. I'm recording this on Good Friday. Look at that. Look at the dedication I have for you guys. Good Friday, that's kind of a bank holiday. And I'm here slaving away. Harder work than any of the factory work I've ever done. I'd love a hot cross bun, is what I'd love. Like, it's weird how hot cross buns hit different to toasted tea cakes. They're essentially the same thing, aren't they? Isn't a toasted tea cake essentially a hot cross bun without the cross? Maybe there's some like glazing on a hot cross bun more. But man, I love a hot cross bun. And I realised it makes a hypocrite out of me. Because one of the clips that went particularly well off of my Twitch was me ranting about pancake day, because I'll have a pancake whenever the fuck I want. I don't need you to tell me the day I can have a pancake. If anything, I'm not going to have a pancake on pancake day. I'll have it any other day because I'm so edgy. But I do get weirded out if people are knocking back hot cross buns outside of this Easter period. Don't like it. I feel it's inappropriate. If I see you eating a hot cross bun outside of Easter, I'm going to be like, all right. I've spoken to people. I've spoken to loved ones about it in the past. I've been like, I think you need to get some control. I think you're showing huge signs of lack of control, because you're just knocking back hot cross buns when you shouldn't be. But at this period, fucking fill your boots. My parents brought back some kaya from Malaysia. I went to Malaysia recently for the first time ever to visit my brother out there. I did a Twitch stream about it. There's a whole, if you go to my Twitch, you click on videos, you go to collections and you go to non-music. There's a load of non-music based streams that are just random stuff. It might be called random non-music streams. Then you can watch the Malaysia trip kind of breakdown on there. But one of the things that we enjoyed out there was kaya toast. And they brought back some kaya, and they've been having that on hot cross buns. And even that, like, I loved kaya toast out there. But even that, I'm looking and like, man, I eat hot cross buns a handful of times a year. I need to just put tons of butter on them and treat them with the respect that they deserve. I can't do a full half hour just because Bex has asked about toasted tea cakes. Let's move on to the next one. Adam Howarth, point one. There's more Adam Howarths to come. This is this is an early stage in the evolution of Adam Howarths. If you could play any historical figure in a movie, who would it be? I've not really got a good answer for this. A little while ago, I can't remember, I ain't got the details, but there was a burglary that took place, and one of the robbers looked quite like me and the other looked quite like Stephen Graham. And me and Stevie joked about, look, if anyone gets the rights to this, hit us up. Because we're always, you know, looking to work together. Obviously, I mean, everyone's always looking to work with Stephen Graham. He's one of the best actors in the world. But yeah, I remember us joking about that and me thinking that would be amazing. So I'm going to pick that historic figure, a historic figure whose name I can't even remember and any details I can't place at all. I remember quite fancying trying to play Charles Manson in a thing a while ago. I saw a thing was casting for Charles Manson. I was like, look, fucking holler at your boy. But I'm too tall. I'm not gangly. I'm kind of weird enough, but I'm not gangly enough. I don't think it would have been good casting. And the guy's a dickhead, obviously. So yeah, I think that's everything. Oh, I tell you what, I had a dream years ago. I tweeted about this. I had a dream years ago. Here's my answer. I had a dream years and years ago, and in that dream, someone mugged me off by saying, "Shut up, you Pythagoras looking motherfucker." And I woke up and I was like, I don't even know what Pythagoras looks like. And then I Googled Pythagoras, and I am a Pythagoras looking motherfucker. So somehow my subconscious knew more than my conscious. So maybe I'd be Pythagoras in the story of Pythagoras and his renowned theorem. Fernie Hernandez, any new projects you working on? Yeah, the short answer is yeah. The long answer is strap yourselves in. So I've got two things that are coming out this year. I've got that I filmed last year that I've got small roles in, but they're amazing series that I'm really excited to be part of. So keep an eye. I think they're both coming out in June. So I'm going to have an exciting June in that respect. I really want, if you're listening to this and you're still on social media, I want to plead with you that if you see me in anything, get on social media and talk about it and use the hashtags of the show and things like that, because they're both shows that I've got a tiny part in, but it was amazing to be part of. And obviously I'd love to be in them more. And I think I've always had that kind of fan base who are so dope and so supportive and can really like move the needle a bit, like when with regards to social media reactions. So if you see either of these shows, I'm not going to say what they are. If you see, I'll talk about it in my Discord and that. I'll definitely have a little call to arms in my Discord and on Twitch and Patreon and all those places. But for now, if you see me in any of these things, rather than just go, oh, dope, go to socials and shout about it and be all excited and make a big deal and make me seem like a big deal. But what am I working on? So I've got two scripts in development. I've been talking about one of them for a while because it's my debut as a feature film writer and director. And it's been highs and lows, man. And the other one's a short that's also my debut as a feature writer and director. And I'm in them, obviously. Sounds like a massive ego project. I promise it's not. But they're both scripts that have got a lot of hype and excitement from people in the industry, from people who know what they're talking about. But they're both scripts that I've hit massive walls on. And it's been really hard, like mentally. It's a tough industry. It's a slow industry. But I was in earlier this week, I was in with Jane at Stammer, the British Stammering Association, for whom I'm a patron. And we were talking about a load of things, a load of plans for Stammer going forward, some amazing things. The amazing things that Jane has already done, they're just astounding. But we were talking about the frustration of this because a couple of years ago, one of the big things for Stammer were highlighting the lack of representation of characters in TV and film who stammer and creators who stammer in the industry. And it's maddening to have had that campaign and to have had like Ofcom agreeing that this needs to be addressed and changed. Huge YouGov polls and that. Showing the huge lack of support and representation, having people like the BFI, Film 4, the BBC all agree about this underrepresentation, and then to be here as a stammering creator and feeling not very supported. And don't get me wrong, I don't feel that I'm being discriminated against because I stammer. I don't feel that's the case, but I certainly don't feel I'm getting support that maybe I feel I should be, given that underrepresentation. And I feel that with all things. I think it's interesting. I think there's a lot of times where movements will happen or statements will be made and people will be massively on board. Yep, completely agree. Completely agree. We need to change this. And when the opportunity comes up to have influence in that change, people maybe aren't there as much. And I think that along all underrepresented areas, I think there's dope people out there who do back people. But like neither of these scripts are about stammering. They have stammering in, but they're not about stammering. And I'm really adamant on that. I don't want to turn up and make a film about stammering. That feels fucking too on the nose or lame to me. And I think representation isn't about, we do the film about, we've done the King's Speech, so that's stammering covered. It should be about it being just part of things, you know? And yeah, as I said, it's maddening to have been part of all of that campaigning and then to be here a few years later and not necessarily seeing support from those areas because this particular bit of unrepresentation is quite invisible, you know? It's really, it doesn't feel as obvious as some things that still need addressing as well. I mean, I guess we've got a lot of listeners who are in the industry. So if you're in the industry or you know someone in the industry, like this question has come up in the first 20 minutes of the episode. So if there's anyone that you can forward this to and say, skip to like 15 minutes in or however long I've been rambling about this and hear this, you know, I'm easy to find. I'm easy to contact. I'm represented by Independent. It's one of the biggest talent groups in the country. So my details are easy to find. And again, we're being backed by some of the, I'm not going to start dropping names here, but the people who are backing this and trying to help with this because of the strength of the script, not because I've got a stammer, because of the strength of the script and the project, there's some of the most established people in the industry. So it's so mad and tough to have the highs of that kind of, look, we rate this, and then the lows of like, yeah, but no one's going to actually allow you to make it. I don't know, it's weird. I'm going to stop talking about it now because it now feels like a massive advert for me. But yeah, they're the projects I'm working on and they're the projects. It's tough. I had my mate Stu Mangan, shout out to Stu Mangan, who did a great, he was a guest on the Reach Out for Mental Health podcast recently with Stu Whiffin and Kirsty. But he's one of my pals who's really good. He checks in. He's like, how you doing? How's everything going? And it's been tough to respond to for the last year and a half. Because every time he checks in, he's like, what are you up to? I'm like, working on these films, man. Trying to get this shit made. Trying to get this shit over the line. And it is, it's constant. But I've not got any updates for him. And I'm not one to kind of give like, yeah, you know, until things are actually happening, I don't like talking about it much. So I don't even bring up the positives on this journey. I'm just like, nothing to tell you, buddy. Anyway, Will Brashears or Will Brashears or Will Brashears. Which writing team would work better, Nick Pizzolatto and Noah Hawley or Garth Ennis and Irvin Welsh? Well, as two previous guests on the Distraction Pieces podcast and two of the people who've created some of my favourite creative offerings in recent decades, I'm going to say Garth Ennis and Irvin Welsh. And I'm going to speed up a bit because we're like 20 minutes in and I've answered about two questions because I talked for ages about toasted tea cakes and then ranted about how sad it is that I've got a stammer and no one's helping me. John Wilder 77, what's the most embarrassing thing you've done that taps you on the shoulder at night? I don't really have anything embarrassing that taps me on the shoulder at night. I'm quite a relaxed person in that respect. The things that tap me on the shoulder at night are genuinely all these creative things that hit walls and I have insomnia trying to think of how I'm going to make them work. And some private life stuff that taps me on the shoulder and makes me overthink stuff, but not really embarrassment. But I can tell you the biggest moment of embarrassment, shout out to my mate Stu Tell, because he loves it, because he was there. It's his favourite moment. But I was at a wrestling event, a WWE event, an NXT event, and I was with my mate Stu and another mate who's in the indie wrestling scene, or who was in the indie wrestling scene at the time. And we watched this event with loads of our pals in. And then we're outside and we're kind of chatting about to go our separate ways. And someone taps me on the shoulder and says, I don't mean to interrupt. This is kind of awkward, but do you think it'd be okay if I have a photo? And I'm like, yeah, man, cool. Yeah, go ahead. And I put my arm around them and that. And they're like, what? And I'm like, what? And they're like, I want a photo with your friend who was the guy who was in the indie wrestling scene. And it was the most embarrassing thing in the world, because I'm really not. I'm not I don't want attention on nights out. I'm not a look at me, guys. I'm Scrooby as Pip. I had a song 20 years ago that you might be familiar with. I ain't that guy at all. Because this person had whispered to me and hadn't made it clear, I genuinely just thought, oh, cool, we'll do this quietly. I won't make a big deal of it, but I look like such a prick. Because they had no idea who I was. Not a clue. Not a clue who I was. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's not a problem. Let's do it quickly. Let's, you know. And my mate Stuart said, cracks up about that, because he was right next to me for it. And he saw me just shrivel as a human. And then I'm like, oh, no, I'll take it. I'll take it. Yeah, it's all good. You get together. 3, 2, okay. And we'll take another one. And 3. It was horrible. Hug the Pretty Cactus. Who's your top Beastie Boy? Well, obviously it's MCA. Rest in peace. MCA is the best Beastie Boy. The evolution of a Beastie Boys fan is, first, your favourite Beastie Boy is Ad Rock, obviously, because he's so fucking cool. Then you get a bit older and get into the more and you become a Mike D fan, because Mike D is a thinking man's Ad Rock. And Mike D always felt like he was, you know, the puppet master in ways. You know, he ran a label, he did all sorts of other things. And then you grow up and you realise MCA is one of the greatest MCs of all time, has one of the best voices ever. When me, the aforementioned Stu Mangan and Matthew Mulhern used to work in HMV and we would be the Beastie Boys, Stu Mangan would be Ad Rock because he's evergreen. Ad Rock and Stu Mangan do not age. Mark 3000 would be Mike D and I'd be MCA. And it felt, you know, at the time I think people felt I'd got the short end of the stick, but I was fucking so happy to be MCA. MCA is the man. Joe PM 94, thoughts on Shogun? I think it's class, and I reckon Cosmo is going to do big things over the next few years. Can defo see him getting an Oscar push in the future. Right, let's get into this. I've not watched Shogun yet, but I'm so excited about it. I'd say it's the TV show I'm most excited about this year. I've heard amazing things. If you don't know, it's on Disney Plus. It's a remake of a show that was out in the 70s that was huge, I believe, but I never saw it. But heard amazing things. And Cosmo Jarvis is in it, who's been on the podcast previously. I'm a huge fan of Cosmo. I feel lucky to kind of consider him a pal, like we've exchanged some emails and that. But more than anything, I'm just a fan. I first saw him in Lady Macbeth with Florence Pugh and then Calm with Horses. He was amazing in. I think he's fantastic. And he's in this show called Shogun on Disney Plus. Now, you're probably going, you're saying how excited you are, but you've not watched it. Well, it's one episode a week, and the last episode comes out the third week of April, I believe. So again, you can see I've looked into this, and I'm like, I can't be starting a one episode a week and having to wait and watching it for that long, one episode at a time. So as we're about to start April, I might start watching it. I might start watching it this weekend. It might be my Easter treat. But then I'll probably binge like the 6 episodes that are up now. And then I'm waiting. But yeah, crazy excited about it. I've heard Cosmo's amazing. And it's getting amazing reviews. It's certified fresh. All the reviews are amazing. The pre-hype was amazing. It seems to be delivering. I'm very excited about it. I hit up the guys at Acast recently about trying to get a sponsorship from ITVX or Disney Plus, because they're both channels that I think are adding so much the dope shit that I think you guys will be into. That isn't the top line, like the main selling points of their services, but there's some stuff below the surface that's so dope. And I'm always like, look, if I can be paid to talk about it, and I'm genuinely excited to tell you all about it, then that's the best of both worlds. That's the dreams. It's a situation. That's how I try and run things here. So holler if you're listening. Text in Walt Disney and can't think of a funny version of saying who runs ITVX, but holler at your boy. Georgie Scriven. Shout out to Georgie, long-time listener and supporter. Is the Scroobia still the OG drink, and is it still Slingsbury Rhubarb Gin and Pepsi Max, or is there a 2024 twist? Happy to share my own versions. All right, I'll hear your own versions. Yeah, the Scroobius is still the drink of the people. I love that you can Google a Scroobius or Scroobius drink or the Scroobius, and it comes up on Google as gin and Pepsi Max. As I said, it should be specifically Slingsbury gin, preferably Slingsbury rhubarb gin and Pepsi Max, not Coke Zero, not Pepsi. Let's be specific on this. I see a lot of people tag me in Scroobiuses and they're sitting there with their Coke Zero or whatever. And I'm like, nah, man. I will allow a substitute on the gins because Slingsbury is harder to find. It's a bit more expensive. But I won't allow a substitute on the Pepsi Max. You can find Pepsi Max in every shop you go in. Grow up. So yeah, let's make the Scroobius the 2024 drink of the summer. You know, let's tag me in it. If you're having a Scroobius, post about it, tag me, holler at your boy. Up your Scroobius intake. The weather is starting to turn nice. It is Scroobius season. Thank you, Georgie, for allowing me to have that rant. Beth Scatter's favourite sandwich. I think a sausage sandwich is underrated. I think a lot of people will be listening to this and going, what are you talking about? I love a sausage sandwich. And then I'll say, when was the last time you had a sausage sandwich? And you'll go, oh, I haven't had a sausage sandwich in fucking ages. There was a park near me that I used to walk Finley in, and I'd go there specifically because they just do a real basic sausage sandwich. Basic supermarket sausages, basic white bread, butter and ketchup, bang. That's all you need. Shout out to Fish Finger Sandwiches. You may have got from this, I don't like cold sandwiches. I'm not into cold sandwiches. I only like hot sandwiches or toasted sandwiches. In fact, let's give a shout out here. There's a place called Melt. I found them on Instagram. It's their web. No, I'm not going to look because I've got my phone on airplane mode. Their Instagram is something like We Are Melt. There you go. I've remembered it. It's We Are Melt. They're in Spitalfields Market and they're a toasty place. And they do the one that I have the most, I think it's called The Melt. It's a cheese and beef brisket toasty with some spring onion, I think, thrown in there, and a pot of gravy for dipping in. It's great, man. In fact, if you start blowing up Melt, tag me in it and say Scroobius Pip sent me here. Scroobius Pip, yo, talked about Melt on his award-winning Distraction Pieces podcast. We've never won any awards. On his award-winning Distraction Pieces podcast, and that's why I'm here. Because I'd like it if Melt gave me their equivalent of like a black card. I went there the other day and I've got a loyalty, like a stamp card thing. And I slapped my stamp card down and they were like, that's not for here. And it was for a random pizza place that me and Jed Shepherd went to once. But I like to keep those loyalty cards if it's like an independent place, because I like to remind myself to go back and support them. And then, you know, anyway, what am I talking about? What am I talking about? Uncle J-Mo, when you're a child, you usually think you can be anything when you're an adult. It might have been something like deep sea explorer or private detective or something. What did young Pip know he was going to be when he got older? I struggle with these questions because I wanted to be a vet. I had a gang called MCC Super Spies. It stood for Meads, Claydon and Cosgrove Super Spies, and we were spies. I think we might have had cards printed. MCC Super Spies, shout out to James Cosgrove and Ricky Claydon and my brother, who was Meads covered two of us. So I think I was probably hoping to be a not only a spy, but a super spy. I wanted to be just super at it, just super at spying. I wanted to be a vet, but I never pursued that in any way. I was always surprised that when I moved into kind of entertainment and when the music career took off, I had a few different people from college say, we always knew you'd do something in that world, like not necessarily music, but something in entertainment, which surprised me because I don't think I was the funniest or most entertaining. I don't know. I never felt particularly confident. So it surprised me to hear from people that kind of implied I was, you know, someone that like, yep. Yeah, He's going to do big things. But then I bet there's loads of people at my college and school or whatever who would have been like, oh my God, I can't believe that you have ended up doing anything with your life. Anyway, Jacob.main, what is your favourite song currently and your favourite song that you've made or worked on? Favourite song that I've made or worked on always changes, but I'd say the three or four that I really sit with pride on. I talk about this a bit on Twitch, that I don't like listening to my own stuff. I find it cringy. I'm not comfortable. I don't enjoy it at all. But that doesn't mean I'm not proud of it. There's some stuff I'm not particularly proud of, but I would say the ones that stick out as the most proud are Letter from God to Man, You Will See Me, Interdiction, Let 'Em Come, and Stunner, probably. But then you can go like Magician's Assistant, Terminal, 5 minutes. I'm now acting as if I think all of my songs are a masterpiece. That's like a fraction of the songs I've done, but I'm dead proud of all of them. Song that I'm most into at the moment, Think You the Shit by Ice Spice. I think it's a banger. Think You the Shit, bitch. You ain't even the fight. A lot of people aren't going to be into it, but that's fine. That's fine. Minister for Deviance. What can we use as a better measure than money when capitalism fails? And how can we make the transition better than the probable collapse? Fucking keep it light, mate. Jesus, Minister for Deviance. Obviously, I've not got a good answer for that. I've spoken before how it breaks my heart. My brother sent me a thing. Can't remember any of the details now. Go back to previous episodes and I've had a more accurate memory of this. But there was a paper written like a good few years before we went to capitalism, and they laid out a system where things have a set price. And again, to be clear, I don't think we could go to it now because capitalism has existed for so long. Our minds work in a certain ways, but everything has a set price. For example, chairs cost X amount. To get your kitchen done, it costs X amount per meter or whatever, you know. And that sounds bonkers, but that system means quality becomes a priority because you can't just make things, you can't make cheap tat. Because it's going to cost the same as good quality stuff. So the stuff that will rise to the top is the best quality, the best stuff. If every, you know, plumber costs the same amount per hour, then the best plumbers will be the ones who work the most, because you've not got some guy undercutting everyone and not doing a good job. And similarly, with all the cheap tat that is now consumerism and is ruining literally the planet and people's lives and well-being, it's to blame for so much. That wouldn't exist because people wouldn't buy poor quality stuff because it will cost the same as good quality stuff. And similarly, the fabric would cost the same to everyone. And just, do you know what I mean? I know it's a hard concept to get your head round out of the blue, but it would have been amazing. But now we've had capitalism and we all love a bargain. Tony's Chocolonely are a great example of this, right? Tony's Chocolonely tastes amazing, but it's pricey. And people go, it's a bit, I know people who go, it's too much, it costs too much for me. Tony's Chocolonely is only expensive because they don't use any like slave labor or child labor. They're one of the only truly fair trade, honest and moral companies. And doing things that way means it costs the amount it costs. So when we buy all this cheaper stuff, we're buying it because they can afford to make it that cheap because they aren't paying people properly and they're exploiting people and they're doing all these other horrible things. So Tony's is a great example of that because it is a company that's thriving and they're showing that you can. They're probably never going to be as big as your Cadbury's and all these other ones, but they're doing all right, man. And they're proving that you can make something ethically and the quality will be good enough for people to go, where they can afford to, for people to go, okay, I'm happy to pay more to live ethically. But again, I think it's too hard to go, and particularly when we've got governments and whoever else who are fucking up everyone's incomes and cost of living and all that. So it's not, some people can't afford to live ethically. But that's, again, that's how we've built the system. Fucking hell, let's move on. Wells, who's recently joined our Twitch community, so welcome in. I'm going to give you a really disappointing answer now, though, because your question is, now Saw the Musical exists, if you had to pick three of the horror movies to be made into musicals, which ones are you choosing? And I'm no horror expert, you know? And yeah, some horror films have made it into my films of the year recently, but yeah, I'm no horror expert, man. So I wouldn't be picking ones that are particularly apt for a musical. I'd pick Host, because Host is one of my favourite films, and Emma from Host is an amazing a musician as well and has got their kind of their pop group, their debut pop group album on the way. So I'd pick Host. I would pick Talk to Me because I loved it as a film. Again, there's no reason for this to be a musical. This is an awful answer. This is just me listing three horror films I've enjoyed, which is silly. So I'm not even going to name a third. Jim underscore Moriarty 101. Do you remember signing your poster on my back at your album launch? John Kennedy was there. We said we'd missed our train and you said, no worries, John will help you get back on his helicopter. No, of course I don't remember. What a mad thing to expect me to remember. That's such a huge expectation, particularly at your debut album launch, where it's the first time you're having all these people who want stuff signed and all that. That's really exciting. But you're expecting me to remember you from however many years ago that album came out, like 16 years ago or some shit. No, Jim, I don't remember you. I appreciate you. I'm glad it sounds like we had a positive interaction. I'm glad you've supported. I love you in many ways, but no, I don't remember you in the slightest. I'm reading your name and looking at your profile, and I don't remember you in the... You've told the full story of what happened. Not a clue. Do not remember that. But thanks, mate. Adam Lentzel, I played you at FIFA on Xbox years ago. It was a 4-4 draw. I think we drew a rematch. Will you give me a rematch? Probably not again. Again, probably not. I think the fact you're saying it's a 4-4 draw, I don't think we would have left it at that. I reckon we would have gone to extra time or penalty. So I reckon I probably beat you and you're not bringing it up. So no, you don't deserve a rematch. Chaddy Wood, how's 2024 been so far for you, Pip? Lots of love. Goober is part of the Twitch community as well. Yeah, it's been all right, man. It's been all right. As I've rambled about, it's all film-based. It's all up and down. It's all feeling really positive and motivated and talented. Like thinking, oh my God, I've written this thing. I feel so good. And then feeling like you're a piece of shit and everything you've made isn't worth anyone's attention. So yeah, but it's all right, man. Ups and downs, ups and downs. That's how it is. Peter Robinson, do you still get ideas for songs, spoken word stuff, or is that finished in your brain? Now, yeah, I get ideas all the time. I note stuff down. Again, no desire to come back to any of that, but I'll have an idea and I'll write it down, and that'll be the achievement bit. That'll be like, oh, that's nice. I like that line. I've said a few times on Twitch, and I've not gone into detail, but annoyingly, I genuinely think I've written some of my best lyrics after I stopped making and releasing music. So you're going to hate that, hearing that. Anyone who's a fan of my music is going to hate that. But I think it's true, but I'm fine with it. Raw with love. My question is, what made you take a step back from social media and has it helped you in the ways you'd hoped it would? That's a really good question. Yeah. So for years on this podcast, I've talked about the negatives of social media and not thinking it's a great place, but I've remained on there too much. Early last year, I went through a big breakup that proper crushed me. Like, it put me in a rough place. So I was off social media for a period because I was just a mess. I wasn't in a place to be on there. And then when I got into a better place, I did some work. I kind of pulled myself out of that hole. I was like, right, well, now I've had a month or two off social media, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 months. It took a long time. I'm a sensitive baby boy. I was like, well, I've broken it. It'd be given my beliefs on social media, now I've had almost a forced break. It would be foolish of me to return. And kind of in that period, Elon took over Twitter and made it X and took away the blue ticks and made you pay for them and all that. And I was like, and it, you know, they just became increasingly horrible places. And I was like, nah, I'm not really coming back. And Instagram, I don't do many posts. I mainly do Instagram stories. Like, I've thought about leaving Instagram, but realistically, where would I look at pictures of Ice Spice? So that's not been an option yet. But yeah, it has been positive. I like my relationship with social media at the moment. I can't remember the last time it got me down. Or the last time it got me down will be when I've had to go onto Twitter, X, to post something work-based. And while I'm on there, I've seen some stuff that's made me fucking miserable. So yeah, I really think it's been good getting off of it. I think not posting much on Instagram because stories, I feel like you're not relying as much on validation because it's there for a day and then it's gone. Your posts, your grid posts, somehow you're going to be kind of having a look at how many likes you've got or comments or reactions or whatever else. My grid posts this year have pretty much 100% been promoting the Mathago video I directed. I returned to video directing for the first time in like 9 years or something. So promoting that, promoting an art collaboration I did with Josephine Hoekstra, which I was really proud of and pleased with. And that's it. And the post about this Q&A. Every now and then I'll do a post about a Twitch stream that's a particularly exciting one for me, but then I'll delete it as soon as the stream's happened. So there's not really that validation or that as much of a hunger for attention. Sometimes Instagram stories are a hunger for attention. There will 100% be times that an Instagram story will get a like and I'll be like, yay, yay, that person liked it. Yay, I got the attention off that person. Yay, I've got that little endorphin hit. But it's a lot less than it was. And yeah, in a good place with it. I also think I've got a Discord that's kind of attached to my Twitch community, and that's been good because that's kind of the main, it is social media, but it's kind of a private and locked off area, and it's just chatting to the good people I like and trust and it's not being having things forced upon me from all the people I don't like. Like, I go on, anytime I jump on Twitter, and until I clicked a thing to make it stop happen, anytime I jump on Twitter, I'd see Sean Strickland tweets. I don't follow Sean Strickland. I don't like Sean Strickland. I've never shown any interest in Sean Strickland. I've never even engaged in with Sean Strickland, yet I see in his stuff and I'm like, mate, go away. So yeah, anyway, that's the end of that, I think. This is a perfectly timed one. Maddie Sullivan, how's Finley? As said, because I had this big breakup, one of the hardest parts was not having my dog anymore, because my ex, who's a wonderful person still, there's no beef, no resentment. They're the one who originally rescued Finley while I was away in Canada filming. So obviously Finley continued to live with them. But I really missed the lad, and I had a good long period where I didn't see him at all, because it was just too tough. It was hard. It was confusing. I wasn't in a space to be there. And to be clear, again, my ex was always welcoming of that. But I was like, we can't just hang out and see the dog or whatever. So anyway, end of last year, we had a couple of walks, and that was just beautiful. It was so emotional to see Finley. For anyone who doesn't know, Finley was my dog and the best dog I've ever met, genuinely, easily. And I've met some fucking good boys. So yeah, we had a couple of walks and it was beautiful. And then there was a point earlier this year where I had the opportunity to have Finley for a sleepover, and it was going to be for 2 nights. I think it ended up being 3 or 4 nights, and that was so beautiful. And then we've had one more sleepover recently as well, and yeah, it's been great, man. It's been really, really beautiful. A lot of you know I love dogs, but specifically my boy Finley, so it's been beautiful to have that chap back in my life. Little Shunts, who I met at a Twitch meetup recently, which 90s TV show would you rather be a contestant on? Roy Walker's Catchphrase or Dale Winton's Supermarket Sweep? It's a tough one. I think it'd be Supermarket Sweep. I think I would choose that, and then it'd be underwhelming when it actually happened. I choose that partly because from watching the streams of Booch Daddy, who sometimes rewatches old Catchphrases, it can be infuriating because they really ran out of actual catchphrases quite quickly. And then, you know, often the things will be nonsensical. Sometimes it will just be a sentence that isn't a catchphrase at all. So I think I'd get too annoyed on that. A Slice of Fry. Are you still a Millwall fan, all things considered, with us being shite and all? And then One Man's Some Photos replied to that saying, he appeared on a podcast fairly recently and spoke about being a Millwall fan. Any Millwall fan knows that you don't walk away when the chips are down. I'm sure Pip enjoys the agony as much as the rest of us. Now, I have touched on this before, but I no longer consider myself a Millwall fan. I'm sorry for the heartbreak here, but it's heartbreaking for me as well. I fell out with the fan base and the club when I spoke out against what I perceived to be racist actions at the club after years of kind of trying to argue both sides, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to go into it in mad detail. I've gone into it before, but there was a point where I felt, or basically very briefly, the crowd booing the players taking the knee when it had been explained in solidarity against racism in football. That's what they had been clear it was. People then decide it's for something else or this or that, but that's what it was clearly for. The crowd booed. I spoke out against that. I got a lot of threats, death threats, aggressive stuff. Had that before. I've spoken out about many things in my 30, 40 years as a Millwall fan. I'm fine with that. But I also got threats against members of my family who've also been going to Millwall for decades. And that didn't sit well with me. That was like, nah, that's not, I don't want to be bringing that. And then the club decided to stop taking the knee. And that was the final straw for me, because I'm like, for years, it's very much, I'd started to waver on that, because it is, it's a vocal minority. But then after three decades, I'm kind of there going, right, well, if it's a vocal minority, then we're either not doing enough to get rid of them, or it's not a vocal minority. And then when the club backed down on that, it was like, well, you're going, yeah, we don't want to anger the racists. And yeah, that made me turn my back on the lot. And it's heartbreaking. And that was when we were doing really good as well. The season after that, I believe it was, like, my dad's still follows and all that. And I'm sure it was the season after that that we almost made the playoffs, maybe two seasons in a row. Neil Harris returned recently, who's probably my favourite Millwall player of all time. He returned as manager recently. So yeah, there's been a lot of things that I would have been engaging in, but no, I walked away from that. So again, apologies if you've heard that before. Anyway, another question from Raw With Love. Have you any plans to direct more videos like the one you did for Mathago Craze? No plans to do any more. That was a piece that just really moved me, but I've read that question because I want to reiterate, go and give that a look if you haven't already. Yeah, I think it's really good. I think Mathago is an amazing writer. It really gave me, exposed me to the changes in the music industry and social media and that since I was releasing music, because the clip I put up on Instagram from the piece got such a huge reaction, got shared so much, had over 100,000 views. It went crazy. So much praise. The piece itself, the full video, which is 6 minutes long, has had like 6,500 views, which is a lot less. And it, yeah, I don't know, it really highlighted that everyone seemed to watch that piece and go, wow, or the clip and go, wow. But a fraction of those people went and watched the whole piece. And I understand it. I understand how social media is, but it certainly didn't make me miss releasing music. Tell you that for free. I'll tell you that for free. Seabird Silver, how do you keep pushing when it feels like what you love isn't getting you anywhere? How do you push through without sacrificing everything to trends, algorithms, chasing people? It's a really good question, Seabird Silver. And my answer to that is essentially changing your perception on what you see as getting anywhere. Like, as much as I'm struggling with these two scripts at the moment, I've been writing scripts for 8 or 9 years now, and so far none of them have got made, but I felt a huge amount of achievement. Like, I feel they will all get made in the end, but I felt a huge amount of achievement in finishing something I think is good, like that I'm really proud of. It's weird. From my music days, it's very much you write it, you record it, you release it. So whilst there's an element of the reward and pride being on the simple act of creating something that you're proud of, that quickly goes over to, oh, what do people think of it? And what's everyone's reaction? Does everyone else think I'm great? Does everyone else think I'm wonderful? Am I making money out of this? How's the tour looking? How's the record sales? Are we going to chart? Are we getting airplay? Kind of the opposite with this. Because yeah, it's a buzz when I share these things with maybe people whose opinions I respect and they like it and all that. But it's a fraction of what it used to be on that kind of needing that outside assurance. Like, I've got mates, my dear friend who's got a question. I'll go to Sophia's question next. I don't think she listens to many of the... I don't feel she'll be tuning in for an Ask Pip episode, but who knows? And she gets annoyed at me a bit because there's a few different scripts that I've talked to her about and I've not shared. But it's purely because I'm like, well, no, I don't know. I'd rather share the finished film, because I have a weird thing where I've, and it could be a problem. I think I've touched upon this before. I've got a weird thing where I don't particularly thrive that outside of validation. And as I said, maybe to a detrimental extent, maybe I'm too comfortable creating these things that potentially no one will ever see. And if I was less comfortable with that, I would have had them made by now. Maybe I'm too chill going, man, I smashed that. I finished that. I'm so proud of it. Now let's start on the next one. You know, and the last couple of years have been a change from that. As I said, the last couple of years, I've been all out on trying to get this film and now this short made. But that's been because of that realization that sometimes I'm too comfortable with the reward being the creation of something rather than the validation that comes with the then making and releasing. So yeah, I'd kind of say that. I'd kind of say just maybe try and adjust what you see as the achievement. I'll give an example. I've told it a million times in numerous episodes, but with my record label, Speech Development Records, we would tend to go out for a meal or a celebratory meal or drink or whatever when the artwork and master audio were submitted to be made to the vinyl printer or whatever else press, rather than the day the album comes out or when we get in the charts or whatever else, because I firmly believed that the achievement is the making and completing of this. Everything that comes after that is a bonus, you know? If it sells, great. If we get good reviews, great. But that's all a bonus. And we can't be... me and B talked about it a bit last week on the people YouTube reviewing his new stuff and not getting too caught up in the hype, because when the negative comes, it means you then have to put value in that as well. So yeah, create stuff and be proud of it. And that's it. There's loads of questions about film and TV and acting, and I feel like I've rambled on too much about that. But Jim Art Department asks, with your acting appearing every so often, breaks my heart a little bit to hear that, by the way, because that is the full-time focus. Acting and writing and directing, all TV and film is the full-time focus, but it's a slow game and you might just get to pop up every now and then and you don't see everything that's going on behind the scenes. I was talking about this a bit privately, but thinking about it a lot with James Acaster recently, who's in the new Ghostbusters film, and people will assume, oh, he's just got a cameo in it or whatever else, or he's just got this role because he's James Acaster, and they won't know that James has auditioned for loads of stuff and not got it. Like, I've auditioned for hundreds of things. I've not had any auditions in the last month or so, actually, but I've auditioned for a lot of stuff. So there's so much that goes on behind the scene. It can be your full focus, and then you'll get a little scene here and a little scene there, and people will think, oh, they've probably just, Pip's been just playing computer games on Twitch or some shit, and then someone's rung up and said, oh, do you want to come and do this? He's gone, yeah, all right. And you've not seen that hundreds of hours that go in behind. Anyway, is there a genre of film you would like to be involved in? I don't know. Obviously, the focus is the films I'm trying to fucking make. I think there's some really dope, exciting stuff being made in horror at the moment. I also think, as ever, with every genre, there's also some shit being made. But yeah, I'd like to be involved in some good horror. I've not really fucked about in that world. Everything, though, man, as limited as some people may see my career so far as, I'm really proud that I've done like comedy stuff on the BBC and Out of Her Mind. And I've done like period drama stuff with Taboo and with The Bastard Executioner. And then I've done like sci-fi with Debris, where I'm like, I'm one of the lead bad guys and all this kind of thing. So yeah, I really enjoy the variation thus far. I'd like to maintain and continue that. Obviously, I'd love some bigger roles, some meatier parts, but I'm fucking humble and respectful of the process and of the game. And I genuinely believe that rather than... it's why my focus has been on writing and directing and all this lately, because rather than sit around and waiting to be given these opportunities, I want to create these roles and do good shit. Anyway, I register operational. I know you like the shooter games and streaming on Twitch, would you, and The Usual Suspects... I presume they mean Ad, Cudder, Llama, Horrible David, Big Taff Man, Funkle Albert, and others. Would you consider trying DayZ? Personally, I think it is the best multiplayer survival game. It's had some major tweaks and is much more playable. I've never played it. I've got it. We were going to play it with Guzbo and Cade a while ago, but I'm not big on games that are like games I like, if that makes sense. So for those who don't know, I play a fair bit of a game called PUBG, and my mate Sam is always trying to get me to play Counter-Strike because he's like, it's a better version of PUBG. People like Cutter at points and Taff and Macaroni Prince have tried to get me on Fortnite because it's like, it's a more fluid version of, but it's like, I don't want a version of a game I already like. What excites me is a game that isn't like something I already like. And people will be like, there's this game that's like Rust. It's like a version. And I'm like, no, I've got Rust if I want to play Rust. I like that. I'm familiar with it. So yeah, I don't know. I've got the game. I was gifted it. I should play it at some point. I don't know if I ever will. Jelly Vizzy, what work project has given you the most fulfillment? Again, fucking boring. Is this the Ask Pip episode or Pip banging on about his fucking scripts? But it's completing these scripts, and when I get to actually make any of them, it's going to be a next level thing. It's going to be really, it's going to be the hardest thing, but it's going to be a next level thing. Kathy Jane 13, do you have a comfort film / TV show that you watch when you need something familiar? Also, how are you? I'm good, thank you, Kathy. The American Office has always been a comfort TV show for pretty much everyone. When it comes to comfort TV and stuff, I'll go to Limmy every now and then. When it comes to comfort TV and films, it will more often be things that happen to be on TV. So if Peep Show or Taskmaster are on, I'll pop them on and just enjoy them. Twitch has become a big comfort thing, actually. So I'll often, if I don't want to maybe fully focus on something, I'll put on, again, any of the people I've mentioned and their streams. And then films, you know, if Goodfellas comes on, Rocky was on the other night and I slung that on, loved every minute of it. And they're all films that I probably wouldn't put on, although I put on True Romance recently and it was just beautiful. Yeah, just wondrous. So yeah, I don't know, any of those films that are kind of old favourites that I can slot into. But then again, I've never been one to just drift in and out of a film. If I'm putting it on, I'll be putting it on and watching it until it finishes, as long as I can stay awake. I've never understood, like, a lot of mates of mine, it's the parents in my friend groups. I'll be like, oh yeah, I've watched the first half of that. I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to finishing it. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? How dare you? You watched the first half of that film and you really enjoyed it. And you're going to watch this. It pains me. It pains me. But yeah, if I'm putting a film on, I'm watching a film. If I'm not watching it, I'm not watching it. But that's me. I have certain problems. I mean, I have certain problems could be a great way to end it. A one-footed dude, would you rather lose an arm or a leg? I think I'd rather lose a leg because I've seen how you've dealt with it and you're amazing. I think an arm would be harder for me to cope with. I think both would be fucking hard to cope with. Great episode in the past, if you've not heard it, with Angel Dufria, who's a cyborg, has got a robot arm. Absolutely astounding. But yeah, I think I'd probably choose a leg. But I wouldn't, like, what's the situation? Who's doing this to me? Am I in trouble? And someone's like, mate, we're going to cut off your leg. We're going to cut off your arm. I'd start with just trying to apologise or figure out another option. Another one from one-footed dude. What's the best moment from your acting career so far? Again, it's hard because, you know, as I said, I've got to make genuine friends with Stephen Graham and Tom Hardy, and I'm working with Charlie Hunnam and Kurt Sutter. Kelly Marcel was a dream to get to finally work with, albeit kind of briefly. She's one of my favourite humans in the world and one of my favourite creatives. But I would probably say the weird one, it's probably working on Debris. And it's weird because it was one of the hardest times. I've talked about it loads. I was in isolation during the pandemic in Canada. Had to spend Christmas and New Year's on my own. Couldn't see any friends or family for 7 months. It was tough. But working with Joel on that, I had input on my character. Like, I wrote a scene. I came up with all sorts of different cool things about the character, and it was so amazing to work on. But it's basically the one thing I've done that never came out in the UK. So it feels like a fever dream. So, and again, I'm in multiple episodes. I'm not in every episode. It's a weird one where I think the character kind of got smaller rather than bigger, but it was because of adapting things. Working on a show during the pandemic means things have to change for the bizarrest of reasons. But it's still a decent-sized character. And I had some really fun scenes. So yeah, it's weird that it feels like the biggest thing I worked on kind of feels like a fever dream because no one I know has seen it. And I'm like, no, honestly, I've seen this thing and it was really good. And anyway, and it was a big show. It was for NBC. It was a big budget, big sci-fi. Anyway, these things happen in MMA. Leon McLeod, previous guest. If you could teach a dog to do one human thing, what would it be? Talk. Imagine. There is no one. People sometimes ask, who would your dream podcast guest be? And I'm always like, there really isn't a dream podcast guest, blah, blah, blah. Fuck that. My dream podcast guest would be Finley. If I could sit down and have an hour-long conversation with Finley that people could understand, that's easily my dream guest. So, yeah, it would be to talk. Imagine having a chat. My old guitar teacher was like a bit of a hippie and a stoner and that. And I went round there once. And bear in mind, I was having these lessons when I was 16 or younger. I'd normally get round and it'd either be hungover or on a come down. And one time I went round and he was running late and I sat with his dog, Ralph. And he was like, mate, fucking hell, last night or maybe the night before, it all got a bit heavy. I did a load of acid and I'm kind of heartbroken because I spoke with Ralph. It turns out Ralph can speak English, but I said something that offended him and now he won't talk to me. And I can't remember what I said. And he was just proper heartbroken because he was like, it's so annoying that we found out that we can communicate. And then I fucked up because I was off my nut and now he won't talk to me. So yeah, imagine being able to have just a full-on understanding conversation with your dog. So shout out to Hippie Joe, aka Joe Fuck. I won't give your actual full name for privacy reasons, but yeah, good times. Anyway, that's probably enough, isn't it? That's a good one to end on, I think. That feels like a good one to end on to me. And we've done over an hour. Apologies if I didn't answer your question. But thank you for your questions all the same. There we go. I'll be back next week. Or let's have the outro music.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That was episode 563 of the Distraction Pieces podcast. Oh, I told you it was a good one. Oh, did you? Come on. It was an absolute joy. I hope you could hear in my voice how much I enjoyed that conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Right. Yeah, that's about it. Next week, I'll be back as ever. We're here every week. Have been for 9 years. So I will see you next week. Until then, stay safe and stay sane. Ta-ta. Fucking hate my own outros. What a wanker.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.